If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and/or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community.
Sarah Rubens is an edible garden designer, certified garden coach, author, and sought-after speaker whose work centers on one powerful idea. Every transformation begins with a seed. Through her platform, Seed to Sanctuary, Sarah helps individuals and communities reconnect with nature as a pathway to living a well-tended life. Without further ado, Sarah Rubens. Hello, everybody. Hello, Sarah. How are you?
Oh, good morning. I'm terrific. I hope you are.
Terrific. Thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast. I want to start out by asking you the question, because a lot of our community is early childhood educators that feel really drawn to gardening, but they quietly believe they don't have a green thumb. Oh. And I know that your story challenges that belief in such a human way. So I know you didn't necessarily start out as someone who knew how to garden. Can you share your early relationship with gardening?
What a great question. And no, I did not literally, I mean, I certainly grew flowers and things like that, but I was not well-versed, nor had I even really dabbled in growing my own food, becoming a foodscaper until COVID hit. And I mean, how many of us have a story now that, you know, what happened during that time? And quite frankly, I was working in corporate America. I was a busy, you know, busy mom, busy wife, working full time. I really didn't have any hobbies or anything to speak of. I was just doing what busy moms do. And all of a sudden COVID hits, I'm stuck at home, working from home. And I just, all the other activities that filled my quote unquote downtime were non-existent. And so all of a sudden I now have a lot of time on my hands. And I'm thinking to myself, well, Lord, I'm not going to give my corporate employer more than the 8 hours a day they deserve. I got to come up with a hobby. I was a self-described most boring person in the world. I literally had no hobbies. I didn't have time. So I do what we all do. I just went on to our friend at the time. It was Google before ChatGPT and thought, well, maybe I'll look and see about, I'll start to dabble in gardening. And boy, did I ever go down the proverbial rabbit hole and became really, really excited about some online content that was available. I took a couple classes, followed their instructions to the T, and lo and behold, my very first garden right out of the bat was absolutely drop-dead gorgeous and prolific. And I became so impassioned about it that I just used to, you know, show pictures of my dogs and my kids, and now I'm showing people pictures of my tomatoes and my cucumbers. I became one of those kind of people. Mm. So really self-taught during COVID.
So this truly became not necessarily a barrier, but an invitation to
even dig deeper. Yes.
So did you have any early mistakes or missteps that gave you some lessons and along the way?
Oh, my goodness, yes. When I started down this journey, I thought, as many, many people say, I'm going to have a raised bed built. And so I just had my local landscaper throw up a couple like 4x6 beds on top of the grass with pressure treated lumber. And it was only about 12 inches tall. And I'm like, okay, I'm a gardener. I'm a raised bed gardener. Look at me. And after I took this class and learned more about organic gardening and about really, you know, a more in-depth definition of a raised bed, I basically ripped all that stuff out and started all over again.
Oh, wow.
And I also didn't understand the importance of soil. I didn't understand the importance of compost. I didn't understand the importance of drip irrigation. All the elements that make our gardens now so incredibly successful and easy and productive. That's the whole key.
So with that, so you're learning as a beginner, and then, but now time has passed and this whole hobby has evolved into an incredible business. And now you're teaching others how to garden. So did any of this journey along the way have an impact on how you teach others how to garden?
Yes. But let me just take a step back and kind of tell you a curveball that was thrown to me in this along this journey. And I think it's kind of, you know, relevant to many, many people that I talk to that are particularly in a season of life where they're trying to pivot, but they don't know how. So I was, as I said, I was working in corporate America. At the time, I was 63 years old when this whole COVID thing and I started gardening and so forth. And I was just having so much fun. And perfect strangers started following me on Instagram and asked me if I would help them. And so I was just doing garden design and installation very much right in my little community, very part-time, because I was, again, working full-time. And one day, I was really just like shocked by the number of people that were really interested in having me help them. And I turned to my husband and said, gosh, I might be able to make this a job someday. And he was being very supportive and enthusiastic. He says, yeah, that's great, but, you know, don't quit your day job. It's like, how can you make a living being a garden coach? You know? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I'm having so much fun. So fast forward, the idea, the backstory here is that I was working in corporate America primarily for the fact that I carried the insurance, the medical insurance for my husband and I. He's a serial entrepreneur. So I had the proverbial insurance handcuffs until turning 65 when we can get on Medicare. So my vision was, I'm just going to do this part-time until I'm 65, and then maybe I'll quit and, you know, do scale it to full-time. Well, lo and behold, the curveball that got thrown to me was at the age of 63 and a half, I was sitting on the beach, Christmas week, Cancun, Mexico, on a family vacation, just had my second mimosa when my phone rang. And I recognized the area code of the number that it was coming from. And I thought, that's odd. Why would somebody from my corporate office be calling me when they know I'm on vacation? So I answered the phone and was just going to say, you know, I'm on PTO. You know, I'm happy to speak to you in 2 days when I get home, but, you know, just let them know that. And this is what the other side of the phone said. Hello, Sarah. I'm sorry to bother you. I know you're on vacation. This is the Human Resources Department, and effective immediately, you have been terminated.
Wow.
At the age of 63 and a half, I was kicked to the curb. My company was doing a downsizing, blah, 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 and I lost my job. And more importantly, I lost my insurance. So I was shocked and stunned and everything else. But, you know, in the United States, if you lose your job, your employer has to allow you the right to buy into their COBRA insurance for 18 months, which turns out was the gap that I needed to get us to 65. And lo and behold, my severance package paid for that gap. And that was nothing short of divine intervention. So I turned to my husband and said, you know, the idea of me going out and looking for a job at this age, I mean, I'd rather have 10 root canals. I couldn't even fathom the idea. Gray hair, interviewing on Zoom, Lord have mercy. And so I said, you know, I really think I could scale my gardening business. You know, can I just have like a 6-month runway, go all in, and let's see what happens? And my business just took off like a hockey stick. Because turns out gardening was having a moment. All of a sudden, a ton of people are interested in gardening, particularly sustainability, organic gardening, taking care of our planet. Where is our food coming from? Looking for something else to do with our lives. The total package is just, I'm so grateful that so many people are so interested. So what I did was I continued with my design and installation, but I started an intensive coaching program where I come alongside a cohort of clients for an entire year and teach them in their own garden, in person, how to become a successful gardener. And more importantly, how to adopt what I call a garden-centered life. Way more than just growing a tomato. It's really not so much about what you're growing. It's about how you're living.
Yeah.
So that's my long, short story of how I started to do it full time. And I now have been doing it full time like 4 years.
Incredible.
Yeah. It gives me so much joy.
Oh, but just to be in that moment, I think just serendipitous in terms of the timing and it being COVID and a lot of folks are rethinking. I mean, for me, it was a lot of schools reaching out to me and saying, how can we teach outdoors?
Exactly. Finally. Oh, gosh.
Sort of like, finally, you know.
Yes, so, absolutely. I mean, everything went outdoors, you know?
Everything went outdoors. So yeah. to hold on to that, into that piece. So one of the pillars, I have four pillars of teaching gardens. And one of our pillars in our framework is the gardens that feed. And I know there's a lot of educators out there that do not have that confidence. And I'm sure that with your clientele, maybe when you're first starting out with them, they don't see themselves as gardeners. Can you tell us a little bit about how those transformations evolve?
Well, if I had a dime for every time somebody said that, you know, I have a black thumb, I could have retired a long time ago. you know, quite frankly, we don't come out of the womb knowing how to garden, knowing how to, you know, grow vegetables. And those folks that have had some experience in it, it's usually learning from their parents or their grandparents. And they are row gardening in the ground. And so I quickly shift the paradigm with my clients and let them know that we are going to set their garden up for success. And if you take the basic elements that I instill in my installations, but I also in teaching them along the way, the garden is set up to succeed. Then Mother Nature comes in and adds her perfect sweet touch. And then you just have some loving people that want to feel well tended while they're tending. It literally can't fail. It's just, it's unbelievably successful. And I mean, it's so much fun for me to get, you know, pictures and videos from all my clients. I've coached now about 50 clients, and I can honestly say I have not had one failure. Not one client has thrown their hands up and said, I can't do this. See, Sarah, I told you I couldn't do it. No, nobody, everybody will succeed if you set it up properly.
So in terms of setting it up, you're talking about the raised garden beds, the soil, the water,
yes.
all of that. So
all the elements of it. Yes.
All the elements.
And I think the other thing is that you have to build the garden in a place where you're going to, it's part of the rhythm of your day. If it's a school, it's part of the rhythm of the school's day. You don't want it to be away from the cadence of your life. Mm-hmm. So I think this is probably one of the most important elements of setting up a garden. Sure, there's soil, you know, and the type of wood you use and blah, 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 blah. But you have to spend time observing the garden every single day. And that doesn't mean that you're going out there in your gardening clothes and you've got your, you know, gloves on and you're going to do pruning and you've got your garden clothes on. No, it's just micro moments of interaction with the garden. And through those, you're going to notice what's working and what's not working. And then you make a mental note of what needs to be worked on when you have a little bit more time or what needs to be taken care of right now. Those little micro moments make the garden so happy and also make the gardener so happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do any of your clients that you're working with, do they have children? Are they integrating Yes. their families into this experience? And what's the impact and what you see in terms of even you mentioned, oh, you know, folks that know how to garden might know through their families handed down. Can you share some of those experiences?
Absolutely. So, you know, something that I describe to my clients, and this I think can really, really also, you know, translate very, very well to an outdoor school situation is, let me paint for you what a scenario of an ideal day would look like. And I'm going to put this from the lens of a mom with school age kids, but, you know, we could pivot and make it work also. So the mom with school age kids is getting her kids busy to, you know, packing lunches and everything, getting her kids off to the school bus or driving them to school or walking to school or whatever. She comes back, and because her garden is between the driveway or her garage and her back door, she walks through the garden and grabs a handful of kale and goes inside and makes herself a smoothie. Okay, so she's now looked and encountered the garden once that day. Then at lunchtime, she's doing whatever she's doing, running errands, working from home, blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden, hungry for lunch. If it's anything like me, I don't have anything to eat for lunch. But gosh, you know what? I've got cucumbers and lettuce and, you know, some tomatoes. I'm going to walk outside and make myself a quick little, you know, crudité salad or something like that. I've now interacted with the garden the second time. The third time is the kids come home from school. We're making dinner and mom says, hey, Billy and Susie, will you go outside and take this bowl and pick some green beans for dinner? Well, oh, yeah, I don't like green beans, Mom. Remember, I don't like green beans. Yeah, but guess what, guys? 6 weeks ago, we planted those beans together and they are now ready for you to harvest. I bet that they're going to taste awesome. And remember what it was like to grow those together. You've now interacted with the garden three times that day and you've gotten your kids bought in to where does food come from?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And there's so many that believe that that comes from the grocery store.
Exactly. I mean, I can't tell you how many adults I have spoken to that had no idea how a broccoli grew.
Yeah.
And so with the school situation, it is just unlocks the creativity, the wonder that a little tiny seed is going to become, you know, in like 70 days, a carrot that they're going to be able to eat. I mean, it's the wonder of it is unbelievable.
Yeah. And imagine if that same garden was in a school with a whole host of teachers and students and access, or every classroom in a school had their own garden bed.
Yes.
That they could grow and learn. And I think it's getting, there's this hump that I feel like a lot of educators need to get past, which is, I don't have a green thumb, or I don't have time, or I don't. It's this mindset, which I'm like, oh, but there's so much beauty.
Well, I was going to say, if they are thinking about grandma and grandpa's gardening back behind the garage where they had to get on their gardening clothes and get on their hands and knees and dig around and get dirty and all that, that's a valid argument. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about building raised beds that are, you know, on the side of the parking space at the school. But I really, something that I'm sure you've done such a fabulous job of educating educators the value of gardening, but let me just reiterate, all the subjects that have to be taught throughout a day can be taught through the lens of the garden. Imagine math. We're going to practice square foot gardening. We need to plant 9 seeds in this square feet. How many seeds can we put in the entire bed? You know, so there's a math lesson. Let's talk about history. How did corn and squash come over to our country? You know, how did these things happen? Then, of course, there's, you know, all the science curriculum. Then there's, you know, the ability even to write. Why don't you go outside and pick 3 plants that, you know, are in various stages of growth right now and create a poem about these? Or, you know, there's literally not a subject in school that you cannot illustrate through the lens of the garden. It's so beautiful. And I love the fact that you're encouraging schools to do this.
Yeah. And I don't think it's rocket science. I think it's exactly what, I mean, you have taught yourself and now it's to become this passion. And I think it's probably, you know, I can only imagine for myself as well that the garden gives back to us so much back to us. And you have written about this in your new book, which is so exciting.
Yeah. It's just really, really unbelievable. I mean, there's so much science now out there about the cognitive benefits of gardening. But also just the cognitive benefits of you know, putting your hands in the dirt. There literally is science that's saying that that has many of the same principles of many antidepressant medications. Being in the sunshine, you know, vitamin D, actually just being physical, just feeling like you have a sense of purpose, like I really, really, really want these carrots to succeed. And so I'm going to make sure that I water them every day. There's just so many benefits to it. And there's been research. There's an author who's written a book about the blue zones. I think his name is Dan Buettner, I think that's how you say his last name. And these are people around the world that live to be beyond the age of 100.
Yeah.
And what they have in common is they all garden. Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing.
I mean, it's the physical part of it. It's the good food, but it's also the community. They're doing it together. That's so important. In our world where we are so disconnected from in-person interaction, the garden is the ultimate melting pot. People come together in the garden. And it's, I mean, I could go on and on and on. I wrote 300 words about it.
And what inspired you to write your book? Can you tell us a little bit about your book?
Yes, absolutely. So my book is called The Love Letter for the Garden-Centered Life. And it is 52 weeks of growing, gathering, living a well-tended life. So I send a newsletter out every single month for my, you know, mailing list. And I realized that I had a lot of content out there. And so I had like a year and a half worth of newsletters. So I certainly had 52 weeks worth of newsletters. And I thought to myself, well, why don't I just repurpose these newsletters? So I turned it into a manuscript. And basically what it is it is a little bit of gardening wisdom, how-to tips and tricks. Also gardening wisdom from how to feed your soul, how to feel well-tended. And then a recipe for every week. And then also a journaling at the end of each season, what worked well, what didn't work well. So it's kind of a self-help slash recipe slash journaling book.
I love that.
It's set up every single week. So you know, if you purchase it in, you know, week 36 of the year, you just pick up the book and look and see, you know, we're week 36. Now, in my zone, it's, you know, for zone 8A, but it's easily adaptable. And it's I have to say, it's lovely. All the photography is my own photography, my clients' gardens, my gardens. So it was a fun project.
That's great. After this whole conversation, if we still have educators that are thinking, you know, I'm just not ready to garden with kids, maybe I'm ready to garden by myself, or I'm not necessarily ready to carry that over with kiddos, share with them, how would you inspire them just to take that first step?
Well, I think, I guess I'd go back and say, why? Why are you interested in gardening? What is it that you want to yield from it? Mm-hmm. And it might be, you know, I just want higher quality food. I want to, you know, help with my grocery bill. I want to have a hobby. I've got this space in my backyard that's being unused. You know, what is the reason that you want to do this? And if they say, I don't know, then certainly I can help them, you know, kind of go through a decision process of figuring out, is this something that is going to give you joy versus a burden? And then I would really talk a lot about the fundamentals when I say set it up for success, break it apart for them and realize that once you set it up, it's really not that much work. Mm-hmm. And so this is something that you can do. And there's, you know, there's a ton of content online for help. In my case, you know, I do face-to-face coaching, but there's there's a ton of resources out there. You just need to make sure that you're paying attention to people that are growing in the same agricultural zone that you live in. You know, I don't want to follow someone that you have up in Massachusetts when I live down here in the South. You
right.
know? Yeah,
I think it's really what we look at in here at Outdoor Classrooms is four different types of teaching gardens. And it's the gardens that feed and then the gardens that attract wildlife is another one, and then art and beauty and outdoor learning stations. But as far as wildlife, do you incorporate that into, I know you've talked about wildlife and incorporating wildlife into your gardens. Does that coincide with the work that you're doing with Gardens That Feed?
Yes, absolutely. So more and more what's happening is that when I'm designing a garden, a raised bed garden installation for a client, we end up putting a pollinator garden border around it to make it look beautiful. And, you know, that space, generally speaking, has to be filled with something. And so that is an ongoing process. You know, obviously, pollinator gardens take a good while to grow and you know, really, really develop. But obviously, it's beautiful, but it brings in our pollinator friends. and it changes, you know, throughout the season. So it also would be a wonderful teaching moment for the students of that school to understand, well, what is a pollinator and why is it important for us to have pollinators? And what can I do myself? What can I do at home to make sure that we have a yard that is set up for pollinators? So I do that a lot with my clients' mm-hmm. installations. And then I also challenge everybody just for the fun of it as a great project. And this, once again, fun project for kids in school is to have your schoolyard or your own yard certified as a national wildlife habitat. Really, really fun little activity to do. Doesn't hardly cost. It actually literally costs nothing unless you want to get the nice sign to put in your yard. But I just spoke on a local TV program last month about this is a great project to do during January when there's nothing we can do really outside, but we can work on getting our yards certified. And then you could also get your yard certified as a monarch way station, a place for the butterflies to have a place to rest. That's a whole nother thing that you can do. Great activities for kids.
And how do you do the monarch way station?
Kind of the same thing. You go to their website and they give you a list of criteria. It's very simple. You have to
very
have
simple.
Very yeah. simple. But the thing that's super, super important for all of us to have is we have to have milkweed. Milkweed is what the monarch butterflies lay their eggs on. The eggs hatch into caterpillars. The caterpillars eat the milkweed, and then they become beautiful monarch butterflies. There's a crisis in our country right now where there's not enough milkweed. Herbicides, insecticides, all those products, the one that in particular that starts with the letter R, has really, really caused a catastrophic deficit in milkweed. And that's a really simple thing to plant around, you know, the gardens and to plant people at the homes. It's kind of my new soapbox to be on in the year 2026.
And you were just in Mexico.
I was.
Seeing those, can you just quickly share?
Yeah.
Yes, it's just I so have, wonderful.
Okay, well, let me just, how many hours do you have? Yes, I had a lifetime experience, a once in a lifetime experience this weekend. I flew into Mexico City with three other passionate gardeners, and we drove about 2.5 hours outside of Mexico City up until the mountains, and we went to a monarch butterfly sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And we went for a hike up to 11,000 feet, very, very high elevation, where the monarch butterflies have come down through Canada, down the West Coast to Mexico City, and they are all hanging out there for about 6 to 8 weeks from like the middle of November till early March, and they are making babies. And so during this time period, there will be 30 million monarch butterflies that migrate through this area. And I got to be there and watch this, and they just are flying all around you. It is the most amazing experience. And you just want to like tell them, I'm working hard to protect your world. I'm trying to protect your world. It's amazing. And it just gives you so much joy, you know, to feel like you can make an impact.
Yeah. And that's the overlying message is that it's not necessarily what you've been saying all along. I mean, it is gardening and growing food and all of that and weaving in the wildlife and so on and so forth. But it's truly making it an impact, not only for ourselves, just as human beings, that we become healthier, but our communities become healthier, our families become healthier. There's a sort of ripple effect.
Yeah.
But and to think, I mean, as you're talking, I'm thinking, wow, like these very fragile butterflies migrating.
I know.
I just can never think about it.
You don't think about it. And here's a crazy thing. The poor male butterfly, once he impregnates the female, he dies. Oh. That's it. One and done. And, you know, then she goes off and lays her eggs and all that. Yeah, it's really, really quite fascinating. And that's just the monarch butterfly. So the swallowtails have another journey and so on and so forth. But yeah, it's quite amazing. And, you know, another thing, just to tap into what you were just saying, another wonderful way for outdoor schools, I think, to use as a learning experience is how about you have the kids harvest and then take that harvest to the local food bank?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, what a wonderful teachable moment. I mean, there's probably a lot of kids in very many communities that don't even realize there is a food bank. What is a food bank? Who uses a food bank? Where do they get their food from? Why isn't there anything fresh there? You know, all just the whole teachable moment of how to be a good citizen, how to be a good neighbor. Yeah.
And that the whole the gardens can teach that.
I mean, absolutely that. And, you know, also just, again, a math lesson, you know, how many tomatoes does it take to make a pound of tomatoes? You know, all those types of things. Weighing and measuring it, all that.
And then you mentioned
I have an outdoor school now at my house.
The other thing that I also think about and what I weave into all of this is the essence of our children are spending so much time on screens that they're not, we are getting fewer and fewer children that are interested in environmental advocacy.
Yeah.
Because they don't have that relationship with the environment. They don't know about the monarchs. They don't know about the birds. They don't know. They just don't. They think that food comes from the grocery store. So really, it's our job, our generation, to really find ways and creative ways. And someone else I had on the podcast called it edutainment, that it's isn't that a great term? We almost have to be entertaining in this movement of nature-based education and gardening and so on and so forth to get our next generation of children so excited about it to the point that they want to move into being an advocate.
Absolutely. And I think that even in climates like, you know, where you are, I'm fortunate enough that I can garden year round in North Carolina, but, you know, and up in other parts of the country, you can't. But you know what? They could do a whole seed starting thing inside. Yeah. And that is an unbelievable teaching opportunity, you know, as well. And there's just literally countless ways to leverage the value of simple act of a raised bed garden. And I think that kids would get, initially they may not be excited about it, but I've gardened with lots of families. Lots of my clients are young families. And, you know, they schedule their session with me when they're going to be home from school. And, you know, mom generally is kind of the main orchestrator, but boy, the questions that they ask, and it's just so amazing just literally see it unlock in their minds.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's really
amazing. What a gift that parent is giving to their children.
Yes.
I mean, that will have an incredible ripple effect.
Yeah. And instances where something did not do well. It didn't survive. It got attacked by slugs or aphids or something. That is a teachable moment right then and there.
Yeah.
And you know, what can you do to prevent that? Obviously, you know, organic and sustainable products, teaching about that. Why shouldn't I be using Miracle-Gro? Why shouldn't I be using Roundup? Explain that whole thing to them. I mean, there's so much. There's so much.
I love the model, your business model, and how you've kept it to be working one-on-one, face-to-face with people, because I feel like there is so much that's online and that that connection.
Oh, absolutely.
So important.
I've made a very conscious decision to not scale my business beyond my face-to-face interaction. So I only coach 25 gardeners at any one time. But I'm with them for an entire year. So I jokingly say, you know, you better like me because we're going to be meeting together once a month for an entire year. But just in the spirit of relationship and so forth, it is so life-giving. I mean, I get to know, obviously, the gardener, their spouse, their kids, their pet, when they have babies, when there's a grandchild, when there's something joyful, when there's something scary. I mean, I'm doing life with these people. And I often ask friends of mine, and I'll ask you, how often do you get together with somebody for an hour once a month?
Yeah.
We just don't. We don't find time for it.
Yeah.
And it's so incredibly life-giving.
And that the structure of that is something that I often think that even us as educators that we can take away from an hour a month to even dive into this type of work, you know, but I also think you speak of consistency and that follow up and learning and being in a learning space of that. I think that's just incredible.
Yeah. in most communities, if a school was saying, you know, we're going to make this investment, we're going to get into this program, and they start talking about it throughout the community, people will come out of the woodwork to say, oh, I can help you. I can help you build these beds. I can donate my compost. I love to garden, but I don't have a space. I can come teach. I mean, just put it out there. And I would venture to, I mean, we have a community garden here in my little town, and it's amazing how many people, it's all volunteer run, and it's unbelievable. All year long, every single Wednesday night and every single Saturday morning, there are people over there working. It's wonderful.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. And I think that's what we need so much now. And I think we need to, that type of energy and community, we need to rub off on our, on the next generation, so we can raise our next generation of nature-based outdoor classroom gardening advocates.
Yeah. And gardening's not going to go away. It hasn't. It's been, you know, since the beginning of time. But I think that there's just more and more and more interest about it. And I think it's, which makes me so happy. Now, you know, when people say, I want to garden because I want to save my grocery bill, I'm like, okay, truth be told, that's going to be the most expensive tomato that you've ever had, but it's going to be also the best tasting one. Right, so right. It really is difficult to justify the math in that tangible exchange, but in everything that what I call the garden-centered life gives you, hey, you may not have to go to therapy, or you may not have to take ADD medication or something like that because you're outside and blah, 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 you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it really, really helps you mind, body, and spirit.
Beautiful. So is there any, I ask all my guests this first before we ask the final question, anything else that we feel like I've missed that you would like to share with our community?
I think once again, if they come to you and they reach out and say, yes, we're interested in doing this, just help them ask the question and help them get the resources to make sure that the elements that you and I have learned on how to set up a proper kitchen garden are followed. Because if you cut corners, it's not going to work. And it all, like, for instance, the most important, well, there's a lot of them, but, you know, well, why can't we just hand water? Why can't we just hand water instead of doing irrigation? And I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole why that is, but it is a really, really important part to the success of the garden. So you can't just cut little corners. There's only about five elements that are super critically important, and each one of those has to be met for the purpose of having the garden set up for success.
And would you like to share those five?
Sure.
You sort of shared them in the beginning.
Yeah. So obviously, a location close to the cadence, the rhythm of the gardener's life. Ideally in a level area that gets 6 to 8 hours of sun a day in the summer. So that location is number one. Number two is raised beds that are built. I like them to be at least 17 inches, if not 24 inches tall. There's lots of kits out there. Try and steer clear of railroad ties, pressure treated lumber. I know that cedar is incredibly expensive, but there's lots of also, you know, metal beds and stuff that you can buy online. So make sure that you're investing in a good quality bed that's tall enough. Now, the reason why the height of the bed is important is that, first of all, let's say it's 2 feet tall. You have 2 feet of beautiful, nutrient-dense soil. So what we've done is we've kind of tricked Mother Nature into creating this ecosystem that is full of this beautiful, beautiful soil. And then secondly, it's super easy to tend to those beds because it's like the height of a table. So I don't have to get down on my hands and knees and put on my gardening clothes and get dirty. I'm just going to walk outside and grab a handful of kale. So it makes it very approachable and easy to do. So that's number two. Number three is make sure that you have pathways between the beds that a wheelbarrow or a little cart or multiple kiddos can get into. I like to have the pathways 3 feet, 3.5 feet wide in between the beds. I like to have the pathways be ideally gravel so that it's very easy for weed control and they don't get squishy and mulch brings in insects and so forth. But I like gravel pathways. And then structures. So lots of the things that we grow, particularly in the warm seasons, are all vining things. Tomatoes, beans, cucumbers, squash. Those things all need to grow up. So make sure that you invest in good, sturdy structures, not tomato cages. Good, sturdy structures that can support these plants, because I promise you, your garden is going to be incredibly successful, and those tomatoes are going to be heavy. They need to have a structure to grow on. And then finally, the importance of drip irrigation. Do not water from up above. It brings in disease. It causes issues with inconsistent watering. Have a drip irrigation system. There's lots of kits out there. Probably a parent at the school could volunteer to help do that. And have a drip irrigation system on a timer so that it is watered consistently. Just like we fed our babies every 2 hours and they were happy, the garden is the same way. It needs to be fed consistently. Those elements are the keys to success.
Brilliant. 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 I love it. I love it. So get on it, everybody.
Other than that, it's easy, right?
Well, it's like anything. It's you really want to build even of a house. You want to build the foundation correctly.
Yes.
And if the foundation isn't done correctly, then it won't necessarily thrive. Then you're always sort of going back and
right.
going, why isn't this working? Which is what happens. Then you get frustration, and then that leads to, I'm not a good gardener, or I don't have a green thumb. So it's
what happens is, as it gets frustrating, then they don't go to the garden because it gives them stress.
Right.
And then, you know, the walls come tumbling down. No, your
right.
pet disease set in, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
That's the whole key, is that the garden needs to be a place of sanctuary, a place you want to go. It gives you joy versus a burden because it's gotten chaotic and overgrown and, you know, full of bugs and powdery mildew and blah, 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 blah.
And so you come in as the garden angel that says, let me help you get to make this. Just to bring in that the skill set, the mindset, and
So you know, I do the
teaching.
Turnkey installation. I bring my crew in. I do the whole turnkey installation. But the coaching program is very much coaching. I don't do maintenance. I am basically spending an hour with them only once a month, teaching them what needs to be done on a routine basis during this month until I see you again, and then we're going to change what needs to be done. But you know, I'll show them how to prune a tomato vine, and then I'll hand the pruners to them and say, okay, now show me how you do it. So it's a teachable moment, just like learning how to, drive a car or play tennis or, play golf or whatever. You need a coach.
And do you provide the plants?
I do. I have a very fortunate and unique relationship with a local greenhouse. So he's a contract grower for me. So I provide all the plants, which is very good because I know the quality of the plants and I know exactly what my clients are putting in their garden. So it's very easy for me to troubleshoot when we have a problem because I know what they've planted. That's not to say that they can't add something themselves, but I usually like for quite frankly, most of my clients are beginner gardeners. And so through the first year, let's just stick with my process and then you could start to branch out and add more things, but let's get your land legs on you on what I know is easy. For instance, I don't grow squash in my clients' gardens. Squash is very difficult to grow organically. You get a lot of pests and disease. So we don't start with squash because if you have a failure like that right off the bat, they're going to get so frustrated, you know? So I tell them you can graduate to squash in year two.
And even doing, that's a shout out to educators, doing very simple things and growing simple things that will success, beans and peas and, that type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, things
are very, very simple.
Doesn't have to be started by seed. There's certain things that start really easy by seed and others not. Yeah, that's all those are teachable moments.
Love that. So if you were to leave one seed of inspiration to our listeners, what would that be?
Having a garden isn't about growing, it's about living.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what it is. And it will give them so much joy.
That gives me goosebumps. And to think that this came from you finding a hobby.
Yeah.
During COVID, that you were not a gardener initially.
Nope. And I tell people all the time, I am self-taught. If I could learn how to do this, I promise you, you can learn how to do it. There was nothing in my history or in my makeup that would set me up for succeeding on how to grow my own food. Nothing. I didn't even know what compost was. So, I mean, I don't try and prove to people, oh, I've been doing this for 100 years, you know. I put it right out there. I just learned how to do this, you know, 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. And it's being curious enough to troubleshoot it.
Well, and also
learn. I guess I like how you said it's like learning how to play tennis. It's like learning anything.
Anything. Exactly. But as we grow older, particularly, you know, my demographic, I'm now 66 years old. We need to continue to use our brains and to learn new things. And it is critically important. And that combined with being physically active, honestly, what's so interesting is once I stopped sitting at a desk because I was in corporate America and started my gardening business without even trying, I lost 30 pounds.
Mm.
Because I'm just physically, I'm moving now, you know? It's crazy.
Yeah. Oh my God, this is so, I'm so inspired.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm inspired by what you're doing. I mean, thank you for carrying this torch forward. We need more people like you doing this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one. And again, this podcast started during COVID with a pause. Everything kind of went quiet. I was doing a lot of things, but I was like, oh my goodness, I want to collect stories. I want to be collecting stories that other nature-based educators in their outdoor classrooms and their gardens, and what are we all doing? And we're all kind of working in our separate silos, and how can we share each other's stories? So it's your story, and then it's all the stories of the families that you're working with your clients. It's if we keep doing that, then hopefully we'll get to a point that we all have these gardens in our backyards and in our schools. And
well, and that's one of the reasons why I actually have started becoming a speaker on this subject. So I now am like a motivational speaker to really get people to embrace that simple phrase, which is it's more about growing, it's about living. Yeah. But also to just break down, you know, I could sit up there all day long and talk about, you know, all the benefits of gardening, but they're going to be like, yeah, but how do I get started?
Right.
So I now, you know, talk through that, each one of those elements of importance. Why is it important? And then what is a metaphor of that for your life? Here, I'll just give you one more thing. And then I, you know, we can wrap it up if you'd like, but structures. Okay. So the structures, you've got those, you know, tomato cages. I say that I hate them. What is it? And it just doesn't support you, and it's going to fall over, and it's going to, you know, crash under pressure and so forth. Well, my God, what analogy or a metaphor for life? Mm-hmm. What structures do you have in your life that are going to support you when things get heavy, when it gets hot? What structures are you going to have in place to make sure that you can get through this particular season? So that is what I speak on now all the time, is really how to just use the garden as a metaphor for life.
Mm, I love that.
Thank you.
What a beautiful metaphor to end on, too.
Oh, and I've got a lot of them.
We'll have to have you back.
Please do.
Thank you so much, Sarah. It's been an absolute honor and pleasure to finally make this connection.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I can hardly wait for you to share this. And if there's anything I could do further to help you, you know where to find me.
I will. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Before you go, I want to share an invitation. If you are an educator who knows outdoor learning matters, but you want more structure, confidence, and support, the Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp might be exactly what you need right now. This is a 5-week online foundations course and is the first step in our Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. Each week, we focus on one of the 5 phases of teaching outdoors, helping you build a strong, sustainable rhythm for your outdoor classroom. You'll get pre-recorded lessons inside a private portal that you can move through at your own pace, along with 5 weekly live Zoom sessions where we come together to reflect, ask questions, and connect with other educators from all over the country doing this work. If you're curious whether the bootcamp is the right fit for you, I'd love to talk to you. You can schedule a one-on-one discovery call with me, Victoria, and we'll think through it together. Head on over to our website to learn more, or we'll have the link in the show notes as well. and see when the next Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp cohort is opening. Thanks for listening and for the work that you're doing to bring learning back into the relationship with nature. So P.S., if you are a Circle member and you are interested in taking the Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp, you get $100 off the price. So there are huge discounts for joining our Circle membership community. So again, if you have any questions about this, schedule that one-on-one call with me and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Talk to you soon. Bye.